Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode has been made in partnership with Tetra Pak. Now, each year, Tetra Pak publishes its Index, a report that looks at consumer trends around the world. The Index is a great tool for identifying new growth opportunities and providing the latest facts and figures in the food and beverage industry. The 2023 Index offers some hugely valuable insights into what consumers want and where the industry might be heading. So, what is the state of play as costs are rising, environmental concerns are reaching fever pitch, and we all get used to a post-pandemic world? With me to discuss this is the fantastic Julia Lucia, Vice President of Marketing at Tetra Pak. Welcome to the podcast, Julia.
Thank you. Great to be here, Anthony.
Well, it's fantastic to have you on. So before we get started, get into the full detail of the index and what you've discovered, can we talk briefly about the index itself? How big an undertaking is it for Tetra Pak? Why is it put together? And what's the benefit to Tetra Pak and the wider food industry as a whole?
Sure, happy to have to describe it. The Tetra Pak Index, it's currently in its 15th iteration, and it provides insights into the global trends and opportunities shaping the future of the food and beverage industry. This year's index looks at the future of health and nutrition and shows that post-pandemic consumers are more focused on health than ever. As investment pours into new food innovation, we're in a transformation phase, with a raft of technologies starting to deliver exciting new products and services. Consumers are seeing technology as key to a healthier, more sustainable, more equitable future. But there are concerns to be navigated, with some becoming wary of innovation, desiring products that are as natural as possible. The findings of the 2023 study, conducted in partnership with global market research agency Ipsos, have been compiled based on data from the following. Global consumer research companies comprising 5,000 online interviews across 10 countries, with including the exploration of 6 new food concepts. We've also looked at expert interviews involving various colleagues in Tetra Pak and senior roles from academia, startups, and research bodies investigating the future of health and nutrition. We looked at ad hoc studies such as plant-based category foresight, immunity-boosting studies, and others. And we've done some desk research, a thorough review of existing data and reports. As I mentioned, this is our 15th iteration, and we believe that at Tetra Pak, we must support our customers through the full innovation journey, starting from understanding the market and trends, to concept building, to recipe testing, to positioning. For example, these types of things enable them to tackle the key trends. This includes the expertise offered by our local and central teams, as well as our product development centers and customer innovation centers. But it goes beyond customers. The index also serves us internally and the wider food industry. It provides consumer insights, for example, understanding the trends that help us adapt products and strategies to meet consumer demands effectively. It helps us with engaging in market research, as we see this research is instrumental in identifying regional variations in consumer attitudes and needs, and that allows us to tailor products and marketing strategies for different markets. It also supports the exploration of innovation ecosystems, where here we gain insight into emerging trends and we anticipate opportunities for food and beverage brands. And finally, it enables us to test concepts with consumers to ensure that our findings are grounded in real-world feedback. So one not-so-small report serves our customers, the industry, and Tetra Pak.
Fantastic. And that's obviously, it's a huge undertaking, and there's lots of detail to get into. So should we start? Let's get into some of that detail now. And maybe we could start by talking about the cost of living crisis. So what changes are people making in relation to food as a result of the cost of living crisis?
We know globally the cost of living crisis has fundamentally changed the consumer landscape, prompting a paradigm shift in consumer behavior and forcing brands to adapt to survive. The increase in price of goods matched with stagnant wage growth has prompted a new era of frugality, and many are having to make hard decisions about what constitutes essential spending. Brands are increasingly held accountable for their pricing strategies, with those perceived as profiteering during this difficult time facing huge backlash. I guess it will come as no surprise that the cost of living crisis is driving consumers to be more thoughtful in their food choices. From moving back to traditional dairy for more expensive plant-based alternatives, to browsing social media for food hacks to help them reduce wasted food, people are really more mindful of their food-related spending. One practical example is the sales of energy-efficient appliances like air fryers have tripled. Not in my household, Anthony, but in many other households. Concerningly, our research showed that nearly half of global respondents say that they're not only getting by, in some cases, it's even worse. They're not even accommodating from a financial perspective. More than half say that they're already planning meals more carefully in order to limit food waste in the households, while nearly half say they're concerned that they can't afford all the food types that they want to buy.
Okay, and that sort of brings me on to my next question. So I wonder, are you seeing the cost of living crisis having an impact on whether or not people make healthy food choices?
Yeah, well, it's clear that the affordability of healthy food is a concern for most people. While sugar and obesity used to be the top concerns regarding food, this is now exceeded by worries about high prices. And 60% are saying that rising prices will limit access to healthy food. However, while they're prepared to cut back on eating out and snacking, consumers are determined to avoid cutting back on food and drink with health benefits. Only 17% of the people say that they're prepared to do this. Consumers are even willing to sacrifice convenience if it means getting healthier products, with 70% making this choice.
That's really interesting, isn't it? And a great insight for people to have. Okay, so post-COVID, we saw an increase in people thinking more about their health. And the index shows that's still the case, as you've mentioned. So is this now a long-term trend? Do we think this is here to stay? And how does that relate to the food industry?
You're so right. The wellness market has absolutely exploded. It's now estimated by McKinsey to be worth more than $1.5 trillion. And growing at a rate of 5 to 10% per year. While it's a global phenomenon, North America is where we're seeing the fastest growth in this sector. I think if you look at how people behaved towards the end of the pandemic versus now, there are actually more people paying attention to the quality of why they eat and what they eat and drink today. 66% in this year's study compared to 62% in 2021. So an uptick of 5 percentage points. In fact, more than half now say that they've improved their eating habits in the past 2 to 3 years. Reducing sugar, eating more fruit, and preparing homemade food are the most popular ways of doing this. And this is the important bit. Consumers look to food and beverage manufacturers and brands to lead the way in providing healthy food choices. They expect companies to communicate their health and wellness credentials, as well as their nutritional and environmental benefits. These companies are also coming under pressure from regulators who are targeting issues like sugar content and greenwashing.
Okay, and it's not just physical health, is it? Mental health is a priority for a lot of people. What has your research found there?
Yeah, well, it's an increasingly turbulent world, we know, and many people are looking at what they consume to help them regain a feeling of control, if not empowerment. This can be event-based, such as products that aid memory for students who are taking exams, or for more life-based, such as foods that support menopause or the aging process. In each of these cases, there's a focus on the mental aspect of the experience as much as there is on the physical aspect. And mental health, you're right, is a growing concern. 3/4 of consumers now agree that mental health is as important as physical well-being, the highest level for any statement in our general health questionnaire, and perhaps the most striking figure in the whole survey. While the pandemic highlighted mental health issues such as anxiety and the effects of isolation, when we look at post-pandemic, these have been joined by new stress factors like the rising cost of living and geopolitical instability. I guess, as you imagine, based on that insight, the connection between physical and mental well-being comes through very strongly in this year's research. When asked what was the most desirable health-related product benefit, it was a tie between those that are good for both physical and mental well-being, and those that can help manage weight loss. And it's just to, you know, if I want to wrap this up, our survey shows that food and beverage products are perceived as critical to helping improve mental well-being. 83% of respondents say that they now consume products that support their mental health, and more than 1/4 do this often. Such products can help them feel more energized, more relaxed, as well as to de-stress and find comfort. I think that's something we're all looking for.
Absolutely. And so do you think, or does your research show, is it that the food and beverage industry is serving this market well enough already? Or is this an area for growth where we're thinking in the future, this could really explode?
Yeah, we believe that physical and mental health will continue to go hand in hand. In fact, it's a trend that we've identified as becoming increasingly important in the future. I think in these challenging times, many consumers feel a need to pause, unwind, and recover. Just breathe, Anthony. Recharging through ingredients such as CBD and herbals can really provide relief from feeling overwhelmed. Others have embraced the resurgence of traditional Chinese medicines as part of their wellness routine. In China, the term involution is gaining traction among Gen Z, who are currently dissatisfied with the demanding 9-to-9, 6 days a week work culture. They're turning to food and beverage offerings that enhance their mood and alleviate stress.
Okay. How do environmental concerns fit into all of this? How much of a priority is the environment for shoppers when they're making their food choices? And what are the things they're looking at? Is it packaging, deforestation? What are the big concerns for consumers?
This is a great question and a great link to what we were talking about overall physical and mental health. We've spoken a lot about the personal health, but the health of the planet is a huge concern for consumers. Awareness cuts both ways, with two-thirds believing environmental factors such as pollution, global warming, and the depletion of natural resources impacts personal health. So this intertwining of people and planet extends to products, with consumers believing that what's good for one must be good for the other, suggesting that companies could view planetary health as an opportunity to provide the co-benefit of both health and sustainability. In fact, 70% of the respondents say that healthy products should not harm the environment, and 54% are willing to take action and change their diet to contribute to a better world. The number one attribute for a package containing a healthy product is indeed recyclability. Meanwhile, another aspect is food waste, and it continues to be a major concern for consumers, exceeded only by high prices, possibly because it's an issue for both environmental and economic reasons. This is leading to a lot of opportunities for recovering and valorizing currently wasted low-value side streams to create new sources of raw materials for food production and processing. Climatarianism is a trend that we're seeing on the rise, with many willing to take the meaningful trade-offs that they believe will have a positive environmental impact. And this is good news. It paves the way for new foods, such as natural plant-based foods and alternative proteins. And these will occupy the space consumers are making for healthy, sustainable food. Anthony, expect climatarianism to grow as the effects of climate change continues to spread.
Okay, great point for people to take away there, I think. So we've mentioned packaging, and linked to that is labelling, and the index suggests people want real clarity on the eco-credentials, particularly of what they're buying. So tell us more about that. What did you find in that area?
Now, so as I mentioned, 70% of global respondents say that healthy products shouldn't hurt the environment, while half say that if a food or drink is not healthy for the individual, it is not sustainable for the planet. Consumers and legislators are on the lookout for greenwashing, with a new EU directive expected to come into effect in the next 4 years that will ensure explicit environmental claims. And those claims must be based on robust scientific evidence. They must demonstrate a life cycle perspective, illustrate whether the claim is accurate for the whole product or only parts of it, and provide transparent information on carbon offsetting. Some companies are already taking steps to ensure responsible marketing and communications. For example, within Tetra Pak, we're regularly updating our procedure for making environmental claims, driven by general principles like clarity, relevance, accuracy, and substantiation. We know that environmental claims must be fact-based and follow authorities' guidelines, as well as international best practices and local codes of conduct.
Okay, let's look at the role of technology. You mentioned it in your first answer. You mentioned technology in food production, and I'm interested in how consumers feel about that. And what seems to be the direction of travel in that area, i.e., more tech and more innovation going into food products. What have you found in that area?
Okay, so we know that the global population is forecast to reach 10 billion by 2050. Feeding that number of people will require 56% more crop calories than were produced in 2010. And this is according to the World Resources Institute. At the same time, food systems account for one-third of greenhouse gas emissions. When you consider the urgency of redesigning how we feed the world, It's easy to see why new food is one of the biggest investment sectors in the world today. And this is an area we're also investing in. Our expertise and scale mean we're able to join forces with startups, academia, incubators, and other types of partners to research and develop a range of new food solutions, focusing on proteins from plants, cells, and microorganisms. But technology married with food is tricky. Many people believe that technology is going to help the global food system, with nearly two-thirds believing technology will play a role in a more sustainable future, and nearly half saying that will help guarantee access to healthy food and drinks for everyone. And as part of this, data will play an increasingly crucial role. Data-driven personalized nutrition will give consumers exactly what they need and when they need it to achieve, and this will help them achieve their life goals and get the most out of the food that they have. I mean, fantastic. However, on the other side of the coin, there are those that have concerns. Nearly half of consumers interviewed said that they're seeing too much innovation in food and they're worried it's not good for them. This contrast between embracing technology and preferring a more natural analog approach is explored at length in the index.
Okay, it's a really interesting area to get into that, isn't it? Looking then at alternative proteins, so they get a lot of interest within the food industry. And I just wonder, is that bearing out in consumer habits? The food industry is interested in alternative proteins, are consumers?
Well, despite that the demand for plant-based protein alternatives has cooled in some market, particularly due to their higher price points, the longer-term forecast for the dairy alternatives market remains strong. With investment in alternative proteins reaching $2.9 billion in 2022 alone, the race is on to drive down the price while elevating the health and sustainability credentials of these food types. Our experts cite the fact that presently, many alternative products lack the nutritional content found in their traditional counterparts, but they expect this to change in the next generation of products. We see that it's the younger consumers that are most open to new ideas. And alternative proteins are no different, not least because they also align with the younger generation's environmental and ethical issues, like animal welfare.
Okay, based on consumer response, at this point, which alternative proteins are looking the most promising, do you think?
Well, consumer research can only examine how the general public currently feels about something. So it's not accurate to use that data to suggest which will that will see widespread adoption. So for instance, I'll give you an example, insect proteins. Insect proteins have the lowest level of consideration for consumers across the countries we surveyed. They're already eaten, though, by 2 billion people in over 80 countries and boast a lower carbon footprint than other food sources, something that's increasingly important to consumers. In fact, one of our industry experts likens insect protein adoption to sushi, pointing out that that took 20 years to take off and now it's on everyone's plates.
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
If we look at the ranking of alternative proteins according to the current consideration by consumers, so how are consumers considering these as important? It looks like this. First is plant-based protein. 65% have heard of them. 59% would consider eating them. In order, it's potato, buckwheat, grain, and hemp. And these were cited as the most interesting plant-based ingredients by consumers. Next up is cultivated or lab-grown proteins. 69% of consumers have heard of them, 54% would consider eating them. However, it's still seen as expensive and often artificial. The next is microbial protein. 58% have heard of them, 54% would consider eating them. Consumers see microbial protein as good for both animal welfare and the planet to an almost equal degree. They're also seen as healthy and nutritious. And finally, insect protein. 65% have heard of them and 41% would consider eating them. Insects are rich in nutrients and protein, easy to cultivate, resource efficient with a low carbon footprint, but many have a strong negative reaction to the thought. Around 3 in 10 consumers say that they'd be scared to try it. So Anthony, are you one of the 3 or are you one of the 7? You up for it?
Yeah, I'm up for it. So I have tried. I mean, I've tried in Thailand. I tried an insect, you know, just I think it was, I don't know what it was actually, but, you know, on a stick and you had a bite of it. I wasn't that keen on that. But, you know, it was part of this job going around to events and trying burgers and things that have been made with insect protein. And actually, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely up for it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, too. I've been to Mexico and I'm a huge Mexican food fan, and if there is a taco, I will certainly have it. And in Mexico, you can get tacos with crickets or with worms. Fantastic.
There you go. See, we're the future. Okay, back to the index then. So sugar gets plenty of mentions throughout the index. And yeah, there was a headline right at the end that says, we've moved to a sugar-free era. And obviously, there's still lots of sugar used in food production. But I suppose the suggestion is that consumers are really starting to turn against it. And you've touched on this already. So what did you find? And why do you think sugar is so high on people's agendas?
Yeah, reduced sugar runs right through this report. It's considered the number one healthy option. It defines our biggest health and nutrition consumer segment, and it's the winning characteristic in our innovation concept test. Sugar is now the main worry relating to consumption of food and beverage products, cited by more than half of respondents, and it exceeds the concern for fat and cholesterol. Consequently, around 4 in 10 consumers are trying to reduce their daily sugar intake, with over a quarter believing they're consuming more than the recommended standards. This is perceived to be 9 to 10 teaspoons a day, which is significantly higher than the actual figure, which is 6 to 9 teaspoons a day. Quitting isn't easy. So 1/3 of people cite that likability and impulse cravings are the joint reason for consumption. We know that desugared juices are gaining in popularity through methods such as fermentation, which turns the sugar into alcohol before removing it completely. And nearly 1/3 of consumers say that they'd be very willing or willing to pay more for a de-sugared juice.
Okay, looking to the future, the index says there can't be a one-size-fits-all approach to consumer behaviour, which I think has come out in during the course of this conversation. It's not, you know, one thing will cover the whole population. So can you introduce to us the segments you've come up with and how big they are and what they mean?
Sure. As a marketing professional, I'm a huge fan of segmentation. Data-driven segmentation is increasing, with brands tailoring products to the ever narrower groups. To get a better understanding of how different consumers think about health and nutrition, both today and in the future, we identified 6 segments. So let's take a look at them. The largest is what we call Weight Watchers, a group that comprises those who have weight control as their main motivation and are cautious about sugar, fat, and obesity. We identified an older group dubbed as the responsible traditionalists, and these people are very concerned about food waste and overpackaging. They avoid sugar and additives and make home-cooked food, and they make up about 17% of our group of respondents. A younger segment is the holistic health seeker. 70% of this group is under 44, and they make up for 12% of the respondent base. These are the people that are most engaged with health and environment, and they're interested in health benefits and food and drink, superfoods and products boosting mental health. The other segments that we have are planet lovers, nutritional minimalists, and finally, health laggards.
Okay. So just finally then, what are some of the trends looking forward? And I know this can be hard, but what are some of the key trends we can expect to see over the next few years?
Yeah, well, I think we can see that consumers are increasingly scrutinizing the health, nutritional, and environmental credentials for food. And this is driving manufacturers to develop next generation ingredients that deliver on all counts, notably sustainability. For example, climate hero ingredients were picked by forecasting agency WGSN as one of their top food and drink trends for 2023 and beyond. Another important trend is about food waste, and I mentioned this before. Today, 1/3 of food is lost or wasted, and there's a growing investment in technologies that aim to reduce this by using low-value side streams. These are the kind of products that would have been discarded otherwise, and instead, they're using them to create new ingredients. This is fueled by a growing global concern around food waste and the drive to develop a circular economy. I can give you an example. At Tetra Pak, we've been collaborating with exciting startups and projects around the world by turning brewer's spent grains, a byproduct of beer, into an ingredient in plant-based milk or bread. And there's another one where the acid whey from cheese production can be used as an ingredient, harnessing the huge nutritional value that it holds, great for protein drinks. These kind of technologies are going to become increasingly important in the future. Another trend that we're seeing is about personalized health. We've spoken about segmentation, and this is part of that, but personalized nutrition is a trend that's relatively new, but it's going to be absolutely revolutionary, with brands investing billions in research, collaborating with universities, and building long-term strategies about targeting different consumer needs. One emerging category is probiotics or functional foods. These don't treat the illness, but inhibit the condition and help to improve your health and well-being from different angles. And finally, one trend we're seeing is that consumers are really seeking authentic connections. While technology has the potential to transform the way people connect, especially during COVID, the aftermath of Zoom fatigue during post-COVID era, coupled with the pervasive use of filters, has generated a strong desire for authenticity. Many consumers now place a high value on transparency, the origin of the products, the narratives behind their food choices. And this manifests as a desire for authentic recipes for global cuisines using traditional ingredients. In parallel with this, there's the focus on strengthening local communities and increasing their economic resilience, resulting in people choosing local and domestic brands alongside taking pride in heritage and local cuisine. On one last note on authentic connections, travel has become increasingly important, and we see that not many people are able to travel back to their home countries. So having products on their shelves that are similar or from or imported into their current countries is really meaningful. If I can't go to Vietnam and would love to have a Vietnamese coffee, it'd be great to be able to have that on my shelf. So having that authentic connection through food really does alleviate the need for travel.
Fantastic. Judith, that has been so fascinating, so insightful, and really delivered in a very accessible way. And the index is obviously a huge undertaking. It's obviously a hugely useful tool for people. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us. Julie, Alicia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here. See you soon.
See you soon. I hope you enjoyed this episode made in partnership with Tetra Pak. There are more episodes featuring Tetra Pak, which you can find on our website, foodmatterslive.com. And if you enjoy the Food Matters Live podcast, you can subscribe via your preferred platform. Thank you so much for listening.